Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, September 19th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Aye, aye,
hey, matey.
Baby. Aye, aye, matey. Arrgh.
Hey, more importantly, it's National Voter Registration Day.
What's so important about that thing. Right, go ahead.
Hey, the most important thing we can do.
Yeah.
I think voting's among our most sacred rights and duties, I'd say, as American citizens. And yet, according to Ballotpedia, less than half of registered voters nationwide voted in last year's midterm elections, just 47% of us. Voter turnout's naturally higher in presidential election years, when households are literally flooded with political ads selling their favorite candidate. Full two-thirds of registered voters turned out for the November 2020 election. It was 60% in 2016, 59% in 2012, and 62% in 2008. But to vote, you gotta get registered. States require that. And as of November 2022, about 63% of age-eligible Americans were actually registered. It's according to the Census Bureau. So if you multiply the 47% voter turnout last year by the 63% of those registered to vote, you get about only 30% of those eligible to vote Americans nationwide who made their voices heard about who would serve them, well, in Congress anyway. So if you're not registered to vote, go to your county or state voter registration website and sign up today. Regardless of your politics, there's a lot at stake. It's a way to make your voice heard. If you don't vote, don't complain to me. Period. Sorry, Melody. Took a little longer than I had intended.
Yes. You know, perhaps those numbers would increase if we had decent people to vote for. That's the problem. And so it doesn't matter who you're voting for, and I've heard this for years, you're voting for the lesser of two evils. Well, they're still evil, so why would I vote for the lesser one? And, you know, that's what we continue to see. And it's really pathetic what we have running for politics, for politicians anymore. I mean, it really is pathetic. And that's, if that's the best that this nation can do or has to offer, It's pretty sad.
So I would say it's why we're on the road we're on.
Yeah, well, I don't know how it's going to be turned around, you know. And, you know, what was interesting, too, is you said that there was, you know, the eligible voters. Well, there's a lot of, I don't think you need registration ID anymore. Anyone can seem to vote anymore.
I don't know why you'd say that. That's not true.
You don't have to show ID or anything when you go to sign up.
Well, you do in a number of states now, actually.
Well, a number you don't, though, either. So it's so inconsistent across the country. And then you wonder why there's, you know, interference with elections. So anyway, let's go ahead and get to the gold prices today. A little pressure on gold today after it was up earlier in trade, $1,932, just down a couple bucks. Silver's down a couple cents at $23.29, although platinum was up $8 at $952, and palladium was up $17 at $1,299. So let's take a peek at the USDX. That was stronger by 0.07, still at 105.13. Crude oil, 91.62. I think in the futures trade, they did pop over 95. It might have even closed there at 95. But we'll take a peek later on and see exactly where it's at. And the markets did come back a little bit from their lows of the day. But the Dow was down 100 points, and the S&P was down 9 points, and the NASDAQ was down 32. So not a lot of action the past couple of days, although I think earlier today the Dow was down a couple hundred points or more. It did come back in the last half hour of trade, and it looks like it, I think they had it down to like 80 points negative, and it started to reverse itself once again. European markets was mixed. You had the DAX down 62 points. Asian markets, the Hang Seng was higher. Everything else was lower. 10-year yield, 4.36%. That was higher today. And the 10-year treasury yield nears the highest level since 2007. So there you go. Natural gas was up almost 4%, 2.83. So there you have it. And of course, everybody is just waiting to hear from the Federal Reserve. No one knows what to do. Me, oh my. And again, I kind of get a kick out of it. But, you know, the latest CPI data showed inflation rose more than expected last month, but everyone is still expecting prices to come down in the future. This is all according to the survey of the University of Michigan. I don't know who those consumers are, but I guess that's positive thinking. The university's August consumer sentiment survey indicated that households' one-year inflation expectations were 3.3%, marking three consecutive months of stability. Meanwhile, the five-year inflation outlook came in at 3.9. And again, that doesn't, well, consumers still believe that this is from Joanne Su. She's the director of surveys of consumers at the University of Michigan. She said consumers still believe that long-run inflation is between 2.9 and 3.1, where it's been for the last couple of years. And, hey, I think they like the stability of the inflation. People behave in accordance with their expectations and with their sentiment and attitudes towards the economy. Inflation expectations, or the rate that consumers expect prices to rise or fall to in the future, can influence higher prices in the economy, Dave.
Yeah. Former Fed economist Claudia Sahm says, theoretically, conceptually, it makes sense. Consumers can kind of make it happen by changing their behavior. Didn't realize we had that much power, but we do represent our spending.
Maybe
anyway.
The government would really make a difference if the government would change their behavior. It would have a bigger impact.
Yeah, well, consumers make up 70% of GDP, and inflation expectations happen to play a crucial role that the feds make. decisions based on. Policymakers take them into account as they work to meet their mandate, that dual mandate of reaching maximum employment and maintaining stable prices. But consumer expectations of inflation are still well above the Fed's 2% inflation target. Fed Chair Jerome Powell's remark at the Kansas City Fed's Jackson Hole Symposium a couple weeks ago noted that inflation has come down, but is still, far away from where they feel they need to go. He said, we're prepared. We, the Fed, are prepared to raise rates further if appropriate and intend to hold policy at a restrictive level until we're confident inflation's moving sustainably down toward our objective. Well, Powell indicated that more interest rate hikes could be on the horizon this year as financial markets await to see if inflation is truly decreasing. By the way, Fed fund futures traders see a 99% probability that the Fed will leave rates alone at the conclusion of their meeting tomorrow. So there you have it.
I'd like to know what they're sustainably down toward our, Oil and treasuries are up. Oil rose to a 10-month high, as I mentioned earlier, as the international benchmark Brent topped the $95 a barrel for the first time since November. And again, it's a pretty powerful rally that I guess it worries everyone. They're afraid it might rekindle higher inflation. And again, cuts from OPEC had an impact on that. The tighter market has ignited a flurry of predictions that $100 oil could soon return in a roster that runs from industry heavyweights such as Chevron CEO Mike Wirth to traditional bears at the too big to fail Citigroup. So, the latest upswing has been marked by significant moves in time spreads, one of the market's mostly keenly tracked metrics, Dave.
Meanwhile, money manager AllianceBernstein says the time is ripe to buy treasuries after a four-month sell-off. That is, the Fed's close to signaling the hiking cycle is over, hoping beyond hope. Many more believe it will start easing next year, driving the benchmark yield as low as 2.5%. Well, Alliance isn't alone in calling for a turning point for U.S. debt, which, by the way, just exceeded $33 trillion on a gross basis today. But its prediction is more aggressive than that of its peers like Jupiter Asset Management. Now, Alliance's Matthew Sheridan, who co-manages the American Income Portfolio Fund, says the Fed's likely to deliver at least 4 rate cuts, presumably next year. In an interview yesterday, he said the risk reward to us looks attractive to own 10-year yields at today's levels. So you gold and silver owners, hold on to your portfolio and think about starting to add to your nest egg sooner than later, because as interest rates begin to fall, it's going to make some of those interest-bearing assets less attractive. And, of course, that makes gold more attractive, generally speaking.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting, though, Dave? Foreign holdings, I saw today, it was out of Reuters, that the foreign holdings of U.S. Treasuries did increase in July, but China holdings, they plunged. But the thing of it is, they don't know who's buying it, because a lot of the money is coming from offshore accounts like the Caymans, Luxembourg, Bermuda, and they're associated with custodians. So it's they don't know exactly who the buyers are.
Interesting.
And then you have Japan is still the largest non-U.S. holder of treasures with $1.112 trillion in July. up from $11.05 trillion in June. Yeah, they're going to keep buying because they need the U.S. To help them defend their nation should things go messy with China and everything. So, yeah, they're going to keep buying our treasuries. But China's dumping. They dropped to $821 billion, the lowest since May of 2009 when it had $776 billion. The data showed. So, you know, a lot of analysts say China's doing it to stem up their currency and so forth. But I think it has deeper political issues than just them trying to stem up their currencies. So that's knowing that governments like lower currencies, you know.
Yeah.
There's low and then there's low. So it just depends on where they're, you know, what they can manage and so forth. And so anyway. I think that's interesting that, you know, now they're telling people to buy the yen. They need to push these 10-year treasuries. They really do. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. And yeah, it showed that U.S. residents increased their holdings. And I would think that would be their I don't know if that would be their portfolios or not.
Yeah, I would suspect a lot of that's 401k money.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that's how it all works, ladies and gentlemen. So, and then when we're talking about benefits and everything, the UAW said that they might announce some additional strikes at the GM, Ford Motor, and Stellantis plants if there isn't a significant progress in the negotiations by Friday noon. This is the president, Sean Fain. The UAW president announcement comes just over a week after the union announced target strikes at assembly plants for each of the big three. 12,700 workers are at the picket lines. And he previously said that the union planned to increase the work stoppages based on how negotiations with the companies were going. And so it's going to be interesting. Currently on strike are workers from GM's mid-size truck and full-size van plant in Wentzville, Missouri, Ford's Ranger pickup and Bronco SUV plant in Wayne, Michigan, and Stellantis Jeep Wrangler and Gladiator plant in Toledo, Ohio. What I find interesting, Dave, is they're all SUV plants and truck plants. So, you know, I wonder why they chose those types of vehicles.
My guess, consumer demand. Plus, they tend to be the higher ticketed items.
True.
Cost more, probably make more profit. I can't back that up with evidence, but my gut tells me that's the case. This is interesting. The union calls these work stoppages stand-up strikes, taken from the sit-down strikes that the UAW initiated back in the 1930s. Instead of striking all plants at once, they select these locals that are called on to stand up and walk out on strike. Targeted strikes typically focus on key plants that then can cause other plants to cease production due to a lack of parts. And maybe that's the thing, that these places offer key parts for SUVs and pickup trucks that are assembled elsewhere. Anyway, Stellantis says discussions with the unions earlier yesterday were constructive and focused on where we can find common ground to reach an agreement. Well, that's the kind of thing I'd expect to be talking about months ahead of the contract expiration date. But I guess you got to start somewhere, right? In any event, key demands from the union have included this 40% hourly pay increase over a four-year period, a reduced 32-hour work week.
It's ridiculous.
More money for less work. A shift back to traditional defined benefit pensions would be a huge benefit. The elimination of pay tiers for workers doing essentially the same job, and a restoration of annual cost of living adjustments. So, plus, not necessarily thickening, Melody, but it's certainly slogging along at a slow pace.
I mean, those are incredible demands.
Yeah, they've had some incredible profits.
Yeah, but hey, when I worked for corporations, I was happy the corporation. I didn't demand paying my higher wage and so forth. That wasn't my position. That's not. I agreed to my pay. I agreed to what they offered to pay me when I joined the company. So I didn't expect anything greater unless I worked harder to earn it. So I don't know. I hear the music, so I guess we're heading into break. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Bethann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Bethann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, you know, folks, I was talking to someone today, and they were telling me they were crying the blues about the IRA they have, and they got the traditional one, but they went through a different gold company because they didn't know we offered. And I don't mention the IRAs very often because I'm a firm believer that if you can take physical delivery of it, you should do so. Bite the bullet and take physical delivery. So that's what she said. She didn't know that we didn't have the IRAs, and she used a company that we use, but she used a different gold broker. And you know what, folks? They're charging you. I mean, all she did was get rounds and bought some of these 2-ounce silver. They're just nothing but rounds. And you know what? Her portfolio is based on half of what she purchased. And that's what these TV, not all of them, I can't get in trouble for, I don't want to, you know, but that's what these people do. And nobody, and you don't check around. People don't check around. Oh, they're on TV, so they must be good. Or they wouldn't be there. Really? Are you kidding me? Is that what people think? I mean, there's more scams that have been advertised on programs on television than probably even on radio. But radio has its share of scammers, too. So I don't get it. That people don't do their homework. And then when you go to sell and you're getting these, you know, your portfolio, when you go and it's costing you $100,000, and even when you get your first statement from them, it shows it's worth $46,000. That's why you can't have numismatic coins in an IRA, because they can't value it. It's just based on the price of the amount of gold. That's why you get 1 ounce coins and bullion coins or bars, so it can be priced. So it just bogs the mind. So yes, we do IRAs. And if you do any type of, when you start buying your gold and silver, good grief, shop around. I got some of the stupidest calls today, and I'm sorry. I know it's none of you listeners, but the craziest, and I know there were probably dealers checking my prices and so forth, because they ask the same kind of dumb questions, thinking that, you know, they're trying to slip up or think they're being smart or something. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. One of these days, I always said, when I retire, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book and say, this is the truth of the matter.
I've got an idea. Maybe you should write a book now that will let you retire.
I don't know. It's just crazy. It's just crazy out there. And
I'll buy several copies if you autograph them.
All right. We did try writing a book. We shouldn't say try. We started to write a book many years ago. We pretty much got the first chapter done, and it was about gold and silver and numismatics. And if I recall the title of the book, it was The Power of Gold and Numismatic Coins, and because they do have some incredible power that they give you when you own them. And they're the numismatic coins are some of the most misrepresented items in the industry. And it's, you know, that and bars. People are pushing. I actually had somebody telling me today about bars that can be scanned from Lord knows what countries around the world just to tell you that they're real. Oh, they have a number. You can scan them. It's like, really? Are you kidding me? It boggles the mind. It just boggles the mind. But anyway. Before we move on, and housing unaffordability, that's going to be killing this nation. You know, we've seen with these higher interest rates, the prices of housing. We already have a housing crisis in this country. There is no affordable housing. We haven't had it for, what, the past 30 years? I mean, it's a problem. It's been a problem. And now with the higher interest rates and the pricing, it's adding more to that crisis, to the affordability crisis. So, you know, and the builders are going to keep building because they build what the banks are going to give them to build, and they build what's according to the demand. They make more money on bigger houses. But people can't afford those bigger houses anymore. And we've seen what's happening. Builders start work on new single-family homes at $941,000 annual rate in August, which is 16% below the average pace of construction from 2020 to 2022. That's incredible, Dave.
Yeah, well, that's consistent with the steep decline in builders' confidence. National Association of Home Builders survey out yesterday showed that their chief economist, Bob Dietz, says high mortgage rates clearly taking a toll on builder confidence and consumer demand. Comes as growing number of buyers continue to defer a home purchase until long-term rates come down. Well, look at it like this. Imagine a house that cost $500,000 2 years ago and a family taking out a mortgage for 80% of the purchase price. At the then national average 30-year fixed mortgage rate of 2.86%, the monthly payment would have been about $1,656. Now, a near 14% run-up in home prices since then would push that home's price to $568,000. And a surge in rates to almost 7.2% last week thus results in a monthly payment $3,077 for the same house.
Wow.
The housing market is broken. Relying so heavily on interest rate policy. The only solution is more supply that won't be forthcoming as long as home builders remain skittish about rates and affordability.
Well, you know what's going to be happening? These people are going to be buying now the adjustable rate mortgages thinking that they're going to go down, and they're going to get – it always happens. And it's not – you know, they're not going to go down. Oh, okay, they might go from 7% to 6.5%. Okay, they're not going to go back to 2 and 3 anymore. I can't imagine. That day is over. So let's go ahead and get to Levity is Golden, Dave. And your topic this week is olive oil, and I think everyone uses olive oil anymore because it's so healthy for you.
Yeah, olive oil, Melody. It's a story that would leave good old Popeye in tears or looking for a good fight with Brutus. Olive oil prices have spiked to fresh records as severe droughts in major oil producing, in olive oil producing countries really hammer supplies, and it's driven up thefts in cooking oil. Global prices for olive oil surged to $8,900 a ton in September, driven by extremely dry weather in the Mediterranean, it's according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Already the average price in August was 130% higher than a year ago, with no signs of easing. Spain, the world's largest producer and exporter of olive oil, has been battered by an intense drought for months. According to the commodity market intelligence firm Mintec, Spain's olive oil production in the recent season slumped to about 610,000 tons. It's a drop of more than 50% compared to the usual 1.3 to 1.5 million tons. And adding to the complexity are concerns about reduced production in other major European producing countries like Italy and Greece, where drought conditions also prevail. Greece and Italy, by the way, are the second and third largest producers of olive oil, according to the International Olive Council. Price of olive oil in Spain's Andalusia region soared to $9 a kilogram in September, marking what's called the highest price ever recorded for Spanish olive oil, an increase of 111% there. Soaring prices and what sometimes referred to as liquid gold have led some to steal it. About 50,000 liters of extra virgin olive oil in one of Spain's oil mills, Marin Serrano El Lagar, were stolen late last month, worth about $500,000 worth of olive oil that the family business lost. Shortly before that, thieves made off with 6,000 liters from Taverna oil mill. There's no respite in sight. Mintec cautioned that if stocks of olive oil, that is, supplies of olive oil, continue to be depleted by the drought, supplies could be exhausted before October, when the fresh harvests usually arrive. Further complicating matters is Turkey's recent decision to suspend bulk olive oil exports, which has worsened the already limited volumes in Spain. Turkey, also a significant olive oil producer, has suspended bulk exports until November 1, move resulting from the global surge in prices. So if you cook with olive oil, or if you take a daily shot of it, like some of the Mediterraneans do, you better watch out, because there could be a shortage coming your way. And that's this week's melody. Levity is golden.
I read an article not too long ago where cooking oil from restaurants, they usually will change the oils like once a week or something like that. And yeah. Then they put it, and they actually have people that come, and that stuff is being stolen.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, it is. Wow. And you know what? But hey, our inflation is coming down. So we can afford all this increase, right? Right. That, we have more and we have more money now.
Got all that savings.
Yeah, right. Right. And you got all those credit cards, so you know, go hit more records, give more records for people using their credit cards and so forth. Yeah, that sounds like a great economy. It sounds like a real healthy economy. Oh my gosh. But thank goodness those used car prices are coming down to impact that inflation number, so it seems like it's getting lower. You know, forget about food and energy. That's nothing. Let's go ahead and talk about hiring, you know, jobs, since it's a big part of people's lives. There was a recent daily blog on this. Joe Weisenthal observed that while hiring activity seems to have cooled across the country, firing activity has also remained a little low. He writes that despite the Fed's rate hiking, there haven't been that many layoffs. And this is by the Labor's Department Weekly Initial Jobless Claims Report, still looking at lower numbers. But the tech sector is the one area that saw a lot of big job cuts last year and early this year, with all the big companies announcing some sort of downsizing. And so he's talking about maybe there's already green shoots on the front. Yeah, well, he's from Bloomberg. What else is he going to say? He points to Salesforce indicating last week that it could be hiring 3,300 people across the various departments, including sales and engineering. This is less than the 8,000 jobs that were cut in January, but it's an indication. Is it a good indication? No, I don't think we've seen anything yet, Dave. But
yeah, I believe you're spot on there. Salesforce also indicated that it's interested in bringing back employees who may have left the company for rivals, showing that the fight for talent in Silicon Valley remains fairly fierce, and it's only going to get fiercer in the coming years with AI development revving up. At the same time, it looks like better times are coming back to Facebook parent Meta. As Bloomberg's Aisha Counts reports, various tech industry perks, which always get cut in downturns, are slowly coming back at the company. T-shirts are being ordered again. Hey, there are more happy hours happening on site. Laundry services and haircuts have also come back. Obviously, tech's often out of step with the broader economy. Again, these companies were cutting back at a time when most employers were holding on to their workers coming out of the pandemic. But on its face, anyway, Wiesenthal believes it looks like more evidence that in this macro environment, the fear is being caught short on workers rather than having too many. Another interesting take.
You know, I have a friend that works for Microsoft, and she told me a long little while ago, she said that a lot of the tech people that were lost in their jobs, they have a high enough education that they were replaced and gone up to other firms. So that's why we didn't see the big drop and when you think about it, IT people, yeah, they're probably a little bit higher educated than, you know, people who are working at General Motors or, you know, and not that I'm saying they're not educated, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying the overall number of people. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's could have why is you're seeing things, you know, like, you know, the laundry coming back a little bit because they were able to find other jobs and so forth. They didn't have to go on to, and they had enough money. They didn't, and probably had better leaving pay and better savings because they probably get paid much, much more, I would think. But anyway. Now, again, this is the time. Is the government shut down or is it going to keep going and so forth and whatnot? And now you're beginning to hear all these Republicans come out and say all these silly things when we really know it doesn't mean anything at all. It's all a show. It's the dog and pony show to make us think that they're working really, really hard. And we were going to touch on this before heading in the break, but it looks like we're there already. So hang tight. We'll be right back.
You're saved, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say nay.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, there's a new book out there from a leading economist that argues two-parent households are essential for creating the hardworking, educated labor force that fuels long-term economic growth. Sure to raise some eyebrows in some segments of the country. Melissa Kearney, who's a University of Maryland economist, argues in her book called The Two-Parent Privilege, which is out today, that the structure of families is an underrated factor in economic outcomes. A top scholar of the economics of family structure, Kearney argues that the public discussion of these issues, especially in elite circles, tends to avoid this truth out of a desire in many cases to avoid stigmatizing single parents. In particular, she finds that single parent households tend to contribute to economic inequality in light of the challenges of supporting a household on one income, especially one with more than one child. Kearney said, quote, given that children from two-parent homes are in general better situated to do well in school, graduate high school and college, and have higher earnings as adults, we should be concerned that 25% of U.S. kids live with only one parent. She added that strengthening families and increasing the share of kids growing up in healthy, stable two-parent homes would mean that more kids would be better positioned to thrive and ultimately to make positive contributions to the workplace and society. That could be an interesting book to check out of your local library. How do you feel about Kearney's thesis? Well, send us your comments. DiscountGoldAndSilver@yahoo.com. We'll read your responses on a future program. Now, also a rising number of American workers fear that technology will make their jobs obsolete in the near future. It's according to a Gallup survey released yesterday. College-educated workers in particular who are hyper-aware of AI and other technological advances are struggling with FOBO, F-O-B-O, the fear of becoming obsolete. I much prefer FOGO or BOGO, buy one, get one free, whatever. Well, the introduction of ChatGPT in the past year seems like the obvious catalyst in worker concern about the threat technology poses to their job security. That's according to Lydia Saad, who's Gallup's director of social research. Currently, 22% of U.S. workers fear their jobs will become obsolete in the near future due to tech. It's a 7-point increase from just 15% a couple years ago. The jump is being driven almost entirely by college-educated workers who, you know, in their computer courses, I presume, are just dealing with the issue a lot more. Between 2021 and 2023, the share of non-college-educated workers concerned about the issue rose from 22 to 24%. Among college-educated workers, it shot up from 8 to 20%. The survey results point to a widening generational gap. Younger workers aged 18 to 34 are more concerned than their older counterparts that technology will replace them. Now, a December analysis from Northwestern College, Kellogg School of Management pointed out that college degrees don't insulate workers from technological advancement. A Wall Street Journal NORC poll in March found that 56% of Americans believe that a 4-year college degree is no longer worth the cost. Beyond that, the fear of becoming obsolete is growing and could become a self-fulfilling prophecy, especially if we don't get ahead of this artificial intelligence asteroid hurling toward us faster than we seem to be prepared for. I'll be writing more about AI over the coming weeks as the real threat it poses for not just workers, but in fact for the entire human race. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets, once again featuring Doug Nolan's weekly Credit Bubble Bulletin blog, Apothecary Herb's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought on why physicians are so disgusted these days. It's also Melody's weekly financial market in recap. Plus, I have a piece called Auto Workers Want a Bigger Slice of Automakers' Pie. As the post-pandemic clouds continue to dissipate into an ever-evolving new normal, a weary nation has turned its attention to this auto worker strike and the profits of an industry that spawned it. In a nutshell, the United Auto Workers' historic strike against all of the big three U.S. car makers comes down to wanting a bigger slice of the pie, a bigger share of their profits. As Axios's Emily Peck writes, the last couple of years have upended the U.S. auto industry. The old system, she points out, was centered on overproduction and then offering steep discounts to move vehicles off dealer lots. Enter COVID, when demand for cars soared and production essentially stopped cold as the pandemic shuttered plants. Sedan, SUV, and truck inventories literally disintegrated, and prices for both new and used cars skyrocketed. As of last month, new car prices were already 23% higher than they were in December 2019, about $44,000 for non-luxury brands versus $66,000 for luxury models. Of course, those are average prices. But according to Edmunds.com, new car prices have begun to stabilize and may even be coming down a little anyway. Vehicles are still selling on average for more than the manufacturer's sticker prices, but at least they're getting closer. The number of car brands are now selling again at below sticker price, something that once was normal not too long ago, but that had become rare over the past few years. For the first half of 2023, new car prices averaged $700 over the manufacturer's suggested retail price. That's according to Edmunds. They note that over the past few months, the prices have fallen to about $230 over MSRP on average. In producing less vehicles but selling them at higher prices, the auto industry was pretty doggone profitable. Now employees want a bigger piece of their employer's take. Workers say that the hard concessions they made in the past helped the big three make it, barely in some cases, through hard times like the Great Recession 15 years ago. Now that profits are up, the UAW says it's time for their lords and ladies to reclaim some of the pay and benefits they gave up. Auto execs say they've offered their workers higher pay, but they can't meet all of the UAW's demands. Why? Well, they point to the uncertainty of added costs and production disruption as the industry shifts to electric vehicles. They say they simply can't afford significantly higher labor costs while simultaneously planning for that transition. But as I wrote in last Friday's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, American automakers have reaped significant profits over the past decade and more recently amid pandemic inventory shocks and, well, resilient consumption. Detroit's Big Three reported a combined $21 billion in profits in the first half of this year alone. Collective profits skyrocketed almost 100%, 92 to be precise, over the last 10 years, with almost $250 billion in profits earned between 2013 and 2022. Now, the companies each won a new contract that leaves them nimble enough to make the transition to EVs and compete with non-unionized automakers like Tesla. So why don't they just reduce dividend payouts to shareholders, put a freeze on share buybacks, and share some of their largesse with the ones who've gotten them to where they are? Question to be answered in the coming weeks. So what if bank employees unionized? That's what I started to think. Perhaps labor organizers trying to make inroads at the nation's too-big-to-fail bank should take a page out of the UAW playbook. About 1,000 Wells Fargo bank employees have been working with the Communication Workers of America for over a decade to try to unionize. Matt Phillips says those efforts can be traced to the bank's legal scandals and show how one business's failures can have that proverbial multiplier effect on employees and the bank culture. Wells Fargo employees range from call center workers to software engineers and compliance officers. They all want better pay and working conditions, including stronger staffing levels and the ability to work remotely. Hey, are you listening to that, Jamie Dimon? Others say there still need to be improvements in the Wells Fargo culture that led to the now infamous fake account scandal. You remember that, when employees were under such intense pressure to sell products that they opened millions of bank and credit card accounts for unknowing customers. Nick Weiner, a CWA senior campaign leader, said people are ticked off for a lot of reasons. Well, three Wells employees filed unfair labor practice charges against Wells at the National Labor Relations Board. They claim the bank's preventing organizers from distributing flyers about the union and retaliating against unionized workers in performance reviews. The latest filings join at least seven other open complaints filed against Wells, including one that may yet lead to formal charges from the NLRB. Well, spokesperson Lori Kite countered, "We respect employees' rights under the National Labor Relations Act, and our politics do not prohibit employees from discussing wages, benefits, and terms of employment or otherwise engaging in collective activity." "Our employees have concerns," she continues. "We want to hear directly from them to understand their perspectives and determine how we can work together to improve our workplace." Spoken as a true-to-form, caring, probably anti-union employer. Yes, come directly to us, dear bank employee, about your organizing concerns, and let us hear you and comfort you, and let us reassure you that you don't need a union because you have us. Now, Phillips reports that Wells workers first started organizing informally over concerns about sales pressure back in 2015, before the fake account scandal broke to the public. Workers reportedly reached out to the Committee for Better Banks. That's an organizing group, which in turn put them in touch with the CWA, but also the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and members of Congress. Wiener says that over the next few years, workers continued talking to management about their concerns. But by 2020 or so, they felt they weren't being heard. Trevor Brown, a 10-year Wells employee, said, "I was at Wells Fargo from the start. I was told to sell, sell, sell." He worked on the team that dealt with customer service calls from customers who'd had fake accounts opened in their name without permission. Brown filed an unfair labor practice charge at the NLRB last week after the union flyer he posted were repeatedly torn down. Now, in the bank's 2022 annual report, Wells CEO Charlie Scharf said past practices were unacceptable, things that are dramatically different now, and the bank's been on a multi-year journey to change the culture. Again, actions will speak louder than words. Brown would beg to differ. "Though some practices have changed since then," he said, "the culture hasn't." It's a tough nut to swallow in a highly competitive industry like the banking industry is. Banking industry that, like none other, has been bailed out time and time again. The organizing workers make up a tiny fraction of the bank's, Wells Fargo's, 238,000 employee workforce. Phillips believes getting the CWA or another union certified will be a huge battle, especially across such a diverse range of job types, and it's not at all clear that they'll be able to pull it off. It turns out only a few banks in the U.S. are unionized, and all of them are smaller. Overall, about 1% of workers employed in the financial industry are in unions, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Wells workers say they only want the bank to make it better for them and their customers. Meanwhile, Brown said, keep putting the flyers up. Can't we all just get along? Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. We'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.